This is the tale of two cars, or at least in part it's that sort of tale, and one of the cars is a 1936 Bentley Le Mans Special. It is owned and driven by Frank Walcott, who also restored it, and it features, among other things, a handcrafted wooden rear-mounted toolbox, which didn't strike me as standard equipment.
No, actually I made that. The tire went right back up to the end and I didn't like the line, so I did that.
Frank Walcott has done all the rest of the work on this Bentley as well.
Chrome is not chrome, it's all nickel, which is very expensive to do and maintain. The body is leather, as you can see, covered over wood, and that made the car much lighter than steel.
This is the actual outside of the body is leather.
You can feel it with your hand there, it's leather.
It is leather, and the Bentley Le Mans Special looks pretty much as it must have looked on the showroom floor in 1936, except for that handcrafted toolbox. What should shine on the car shines, and the driver's seat looks as if nobody's ever eaten a donut in it. Even the engine gleams, all of which no doubt strikes Sandy Leith, who is standing beside a partially blue Bugatti sports car, as perverse and altogether wrong.
This is a car I found in a barn 15 years ago.
And you wouldn't paint this, right?
I would not. I love it the way it is. They can only look that way once. People try to fake that appearance now. That's the real deal.
You mean like distressed jeans?
Yeah, absolutely. They call it patinating, and it's you can tell when they've been patinated. They just don't look quite right.
So you have two choices if you're going to own one of these cars. You either present it as the beat-up car that it is, or you lovingly restore it to what it would have looked like in 1932 or 1928.
That's correct.
All of the cars, perhaps two dozen in all, parked at the top of Honeywell Hill in Wellesley, Massachusetts, on this sunny May morning, look wonderful in their way. But appearance is only part of the reason their owners and drivers have gathered at the top of the driveway that snakes up into the Honeywell estate. This morning marks the 40th anniversary of the Honeywell Hill Climb, during which each of these Bentleys and Bugattis and Rileys will roar one at a time from the bottom to the top of the road, where somebody will punch a stopwatch. Among those for whom this tradition has never grown old is Sarah Rowe. She and her son brought two cars to Honeywell Hill from Maine.
I've always loved old cars, and I've been doing this hill for 30 years.
30 of the 40?
Yeah. And I started doing it with my Riley, and when my husband died 10 years ago, I brought the Bugatti, because this was his, and now it's mine.
The Bugatti certainly looked fast, so as her son started the adjacent Riley, I asked Ms. Rowe if she was a contender.
No, I'm not going to win because there are a lot more powerful cars than mine, apart from anything else. But I just take into account the fact that I'm the only woman.
So you win your division.
Yes, but we don't get prizes anyway, so anyway, we need to start our engines.
Almost none of the drivers I spoke with before the racing began felt they could win, though some of them had certainly taken power into account when they rebuilt their cars. Consider, for example, Hall Fillinger and his 1912 Mercedes.
I found the car, or the remains of the car, in the early 90s. The engine is the focal point of the car. The engine is a 9.5-liter World War I Hall Scott airplane engine. And
that sounds fast.
It is. However, you do have to be very careful because it only has rear wheel brakes. So you want to drive about 3 or 4 car lengths ahead because you need some stopping power. It's a ferociously fast car.
Eventually, it was time for the cars, ferociously fast and otherwise, to wind their way back down the hill to the starting line. But not before Sandy Leith, who took over the task of organizing the hill climb from his father 20 years ago, issued some last-minute instructions.
As you probably saw coming up, the course is a little wet, so we're not going to push it this morning. Just find the line. It's very ridged, shouldered on the corner, on the edges of the pavement. So don't put a wheel wrong because it could be disastrous. Helmet required, please. No passengers. Seat belt, if you have one.
Clear at the top. Ready to go.
Ready at the top.
Ready at the top.
As I watched the cars cough and clatter by, most of them covering the distance in between 35 and 50 seconds, I noticed a woman who was meticulously recording the results of each run. It turned out that Carol Bragg's relationship to the event was more than casual.
My husband, Ben, is one of the hill climb people, performers, what do you call them? Racers.
So when
and
it's his turn.
And I get stuck doing the times.
Yeah, but when it's his turn, no matter what, you write down 27 seconds, right?
That is not correct. I do not cheat, but he does hold the course record. Last year he set it.
And by golly, with his wife here at the scorer's table, he'll probably keep it.
I hope so.
For the record, after the 40th running of the climb, Carol Bragg's husband Ben did still hold the record at Hunnewell Hill. Though he has no trophy, no medal, no tangible reward at all to show for this distinction, he has earned, as another competitor told me, the adulation of dozens. On that sunny, albeit somewhat noisy day at the top of that hill in Wellesley, it seemed somehow sufficient. You're listening to Only a Game,